This is Philosophy versus Improv, where two sages try to teach each other a thing or two, and maybe you, the audience, get something out of it as well.
Hello, and welcome to Philosophy versus Improv. It is Mary Hines here with you, bringing the improvisational prowess, and I'm joined by my co-host.
This is Mark Linsenmeyer. I have training in philosophy enough to, at least, you know, enough for you people, and we are joined by a very special guest.
Hello, guys. This is Andrea Rocella speaking with you from the beautiful 104 degrees Florida. It's a joy for me to be here.
Typically, our guests are philosophy professionals or acting people, but you are another folks that seems to do some of each. Well, yeah, what's your background? I understand you're a teacher. You were doing acting, at least in Italy. What is your status here?
Well, I've been acting almost all my life. Ever since I was in elementary school, I was already doing something like that. And then I started working around the world as an artistic director and doing shows in resorts. From there, I transitioned to theater and I started performing in operetta and musical theater. So I've been singing and acting for maybe 3-4 years touring Italy. And then I moved to the United States because I fell in love with New York City and Broadway and all of that. And so I quit everything I was doing in Italy. I had written a book and I wrote a musical and I was on tour with performing. I just moved to the United States and I started a completely different journey. Because I didn't know English very well back then, I couldn't really act. So I started writing more because writing didn't have an accent, and also I had time to Google or go on a dictionary and understand how to put together something that I wanted to say. And then now I've been here for 17 years, so that has changed. And I wrote my second book, which is Think Town, and this, I guess, the glue that took us here today, which is a philosophy book.
You know, there's a phrase that we say in theater that you've been like bitten by the bug, bitten by the theater bug. So what about theater got you? Do you recall?
I was very fortunate in my childhood because my family always, everybody loved me so much. So every time I was speaking and I was just making a joke, the feedback was always fantastic. So I think that started creating that longing for a reaction for what I say. And so I remember that in an elementary school, and my teacher gave me this role, like lead role in a kind of comedy sketch at the end of the year as a performance. And that went, they say, I don't remember it completely, but they say so well, everybody just complimented. And so then the next year, they gave me another bigger role. I was the host of the whole show. And so I guess that more than at that point, me was everybody else telling me, oh, you should do this. Just be an actor. Just do all of that. And I loved the fact that if I say something, there's a reaction like laughter. I remember that to be so at home. I was always seeking it. Everybody at home was making jokes all the time. Like I grew up in a joking family. I think that became, okay, why is this not happening when I'm home? And so I tried to create that from the jokes and the laughters became also, okay, I can also be a character. I can also be somebody else, or I can sing. Okay, let me learn how to do that. And so that became really, I think the bug grew within me. And now it transitioned. I still want to do stage if it's possible, but more is more on the writing. I did that one time. I wrote the first musical in Italy and I saw it live happen, something that I wrote while I was shaving or in the bathroom or walking. And that was actually happening. Actors understood what I meant. It was on the stage and that was a new drug. And so I thought, okay, this is what I want to do now. Okay, I'll act, but I want to do that.
Let me ask you then about the book here. So it's a book of philosophical poetry. I'm a sucker for maps. So you have a little map at the beginning of here are all the parts of Think Town. And then there's a section, a sort of a chapter on each of them. Fear Theater, Society Square, Judgment Court, Possession Cove, things like that. And in each of these, you have a little sort of metaphorical description of the geography of the place. And then a page or two or more of little aphorisms. And I read something, I think, in your materials that said you've been working on these aphorisms 20 years, right? This is not sit down and I'm going to just write 10 aphorisms about fear. Yeah, why the aphorism? And I assume that in Europe, they sort of make people take philosophy more than in America. So yeah, what is your philosophical background that led you to this?
Philosophy, unfortunately, wasn't part of my school. They never taught me in that sense. But as I was saying before, jokes were something in my family. Also, my dad read a million books. And so speaking in terms of with some depth was also part of my upbringing. Now, at one point, I realized that many of us just have a little notebook and write notes or thoughts about something. Very quickly, I realized that what I was writing was in a form of quote or an aphorism or a thought that was like compressed and it was somewhat beautiful, but also with a meaning behind. And so I realized that was just something natural that kept coming. If I got to an understanding or some aha moment or some doubt or something that tickled the intellect, it would translate more easily into something that was powerful like an aphorism. And so throughout the years, and I had so many notebooks, and as a matter of fact, the book started in Italian and then became in English when it came to the United States and we got translated. But I mean, most aphorisms were written in the past 17 years. So most of it was already in English. And so that is really how it happened. And at one point I had this, like at that point, it was like maybe 400 aphorisms. Now it's 550. Another maybe 50 or 100 were cut. They didn't make it to the book. But those were the ones that really I had, and I didn't understand really how to put them together. They already had a theme. So like fear was already there, right? And then maybe positive and negative or love. They were already there in chapters, but I didn't understand how it was. And then one night, I might have been not completely sober that night, but I had the feeling that maybe that should have been the way I see it, which is a town within our mind. So the book is really a metaphor. And I imagine the mind as a town. And then it all made perfect sense. And then everything started clicking. Oh, yeah, yes, exactly. I actually can create a whole metaphor of this area of town or this street and envision it, because that's the way we process our thoughts when this happens, when this kind of thought happens, when you're positive, when you're negative, when you're in love or anger, or even the subconscious made perfect sense to be a subway and so forth. That's how it developed.
It's a very cool format. I found as I was reading pieces of it that it was causing me to muse on my own thoughts and reflections around those same subjects. So I'm curious, is there any particular chapter or philosophical subject of the different elements of Think Town that intrigues you the most?
Well, as it is with maybe food or music or movies, there's just times in life that you are more into something and then you transition.
Sure.
Into something else. So there were moments where fear theater was so important, because I actually never experienced fear very much in my life. And so it was easier to see it because I could see it in other people and I could see how that would damage them and they would divert the decisions towards something that just make them stall rather than act and live.
Just to offer, as you're talking about the fear thing, I found something in the fear section that I wrote down that really resonates with me. Visitors leave only when their own will overcomes the inertia the space inspires.
Yeah.
Which I found very fascinating.
Thank you. Well, it really is like you have it genetically. We were given fear so that we wouldn't put our hand on the fire, we wouldn't jump off the cliff, and wouldn't make those things. So we are there to protect. So fear is actually a very, very useful tool. But then that tool becomes something that we use as comfort, and then it completely hinders our life. Almost everything in life is beautiful and is there to be a tool for us. And then because of the way we deal, we overthink, we overdo, then it goes into a direction that it wouldn't be what it's useful.
Hey, Andrea, it's me. It's the monster under your bed. I've got a couple things I'd like to talk about with you if you have the time. I know you just got in the bed and you're not sleepy yet, so can we have a quick conversation?
Have you always been there?
Yeah, this is where I live. Yeah, I mean, it's a bit, you know, basically underneath your bed is like my sunroom. Or really my moon room, because sun does terrible things to my skin, you know? I'm covered in scales and I... But anyway, my whole point is, you know, it's like a portal. So basically, anyway, I'm sorry, I'm beating around the bush.
You usually do that. That's a classic behavior of yours, but...
Oh, thank you for acknowledging me, because I thought you didn't care about me anymore, because you're not scared of me anymore. And, I gotta say, I might get fired as you're under the bed monster because you're not scared of me anymore.
Well, what's the problem? You have so many other beds to go to. Like, the world is filled with beds. They can't wait to have you under.
But no one is you. And you're putting me in a very vulnerable situation, and I'm fearful for my job, and you actually are my favorite client because you're the closest commute to my kids and my wife. And we've been having some marital spats because I'm not bringing home enough, you know, fresh meat anymore because you're not scared of me, and I can't feast on your nightmares because you...
I'll take responsibility for that. I mean, you get a new stuffed animal that is a very effective shield against this sort of thing, can provide security, provide something tangible that he can hold on to. He doesn't need some sort of wispy piece of crap under the bed.
Exactly. So you can just, first of all, you can take advantage of the, play with it. But also, have you noticed under your bed?
Under my bed?
Yeah, because it feels there's somebody else under your bed. That's why you're fearful and afraid of not feeding your family.
Wait a second. Don't you psychoanalyze me.
Just knock, knock, knock. Try knock down below. I'm pretty sure somebody else is there.
Somebody's there underneath my bed?
Yeah.
Everybody has a bed. I got my own bed. I stay during the day. It's one of those sort of Toy Story sort of situations where I go home to my wife and kids and, then come here to be a stuffed animal just for the night. But, you know, when I get lost, that's because I'm at home. I'll check my bed as well.
Exactly. What was your name, by the way? Because I forgot you. Do I know your name, little stuff, cute stuff animal?
I mean, I think you're the one who was supposed to come up with a name.
I'm pretty sure that's your responsibility. And now you're trying to pass off the buck to us, and it's not our responsibility. Relationships are a two-way street about communication and love and respect. And I know everybody else loves you, but honestly, not here.
Well, that's true. But, the reason why I actually forgot... And I apologize. I forgot your name that I gave you so long ago because I haven't really needed you in a long time. Without the fear, you don't really need the thing to hold on to. So maybe you can go down the bed to her and comfort her. And then you can give her.
Do you want to be my under the bed friend?
All right. Stuff me under the bed. It was just Teddy, by the way. I mean, it's a most uncreative name. But I guess that just became a generic. It was like, you know, Kleenex brand and Kleenex. And so I just became the Teddy. Maybe that had some other name in your mind. But this, anyway, it was not communicated to me. That's fine.
That's when I started learning how to read. So I read it. I thought that was your name. I said, were you talking to me? Because at that point, you were actually talking to me a lot. You were telling me to be... to relax, don't worry. And that was a beautiful time we spent together. But, you know, like Dr. Seuss says, you have to be happy for what you had and not sad for what you don't have anymore. So at one point, we parted ways and I forgot about you. And I really hope you enjoyed that time of separation. Were you missing?
I mean, yeah, I got to go to college. And
I'm having a hard time being mad at you because you're making some very eloquent points. And honestly, for a 10-year-old, I'm really impressed.
Thank you. Thank you. It's beautiful. That's what my friends in school say the same. Like, and, you know, I kind of counsel them through their problems. Because
well, can you do me a favor? Can you do me a favor? Maybe like twice a week? You can just like kind of, I got a microphone placed up by your headboard. If you could just give me please don't eat me. Or stay away from me with your beautiful claws. Don't scratch me. You know, maybe just twice a week. You know, could you do that for me, please?
Not only would I do that, I just wanted to know that I already do that. It's just you haven't noticed I do. Because you're spending too much time listening to the other one.
No, and I've been so scared of losing you that I've been having a hard time. I'm so happy that we communicated. Honestly, Teddy, I'm sorry for being such an asshole. It's a hard time to be a monster nowadays.
I mean, I guess we're going to be spending a lot more time together, so I'll have to get used to that.
I'm excited to be working with you.
Yeah, all right.
End scene.
Let's wrap that up.
I've forgotten about you. I really communicate with you. I actually thank you for how helpful you've been in making me make wrong things that would be hurtful to me. So I appreciate it. But also sometimes you tend to talk too much. And that's when it's better you stay under the bed.
I love it. Great job.
Do not let the scene end without some constructive criticism and a thank you. You got to lead with the good. That was very good modeling.
Great job, Andrea. Great job.
I love it.
Very fun.
Yeah, you were starting to pull out the aphorisms as your character there, which seems like a very good format
let me lead with the good here. For the present day, it seems like you could make, the next thing should be either yourself to learn, or maybe you already know how to use some graphics programs, or in fact, use AI, make visual memes out of probably at least 10% of these things.
Or maybe hire some artists that
sign,
are really...
Sign, yes, that's actually better.
Yeah.
And sign your name at the bottom, so as they get distributed around the internet, then you will get credit.
Or Canva. Canva's great too, and you can do it yourself pretty easily.
And first of all, thank you for the advice and also for the care. I have started that 2 weeks ago with because I was introduced to this new concept of AI agents, which is the new generation of it. You know, before we used to say, just say, hey, okay, ChatGPT, can I do this? How do I do this? Blah, blah, blah. Now they actually do things for you. It's the new era. And so I tried it because I have a little bit of a geeky side. And so I tried it and I was mind blown completely. It's incredible. So I have this AI agent who every morning creates these cards and with the aphorisms from the book and just posts them on all social media and posts videos that I've recorded, because I do a philosophy circle out of the library here close by, and so I've recorded some videos. So this AI system just took the videos that I had already cut and posts them on TikTok and post them on YouTube. So it's really beautiful as it gets, and as everything, you can see it from the other angle and it could be frightening, but I choose not to. And so I'm doing that. And so thank you for saying that. It's really incredible, and the quality of what they come out with, because the AI read the book, we spoke a little bit with an onboarding process, and now they just knows about me, which is beautiful, crazy, surreal. As life, though, it is not too far from life in any way. It's part of it.
Don't be afraid, Mary. This is page 8 of the book. Mary, don't be afraid of the AI, or even though it might kill us.
I will offer you here, and I'll keep myself concise, but it is a little bit of a fear response, but mostly it is, we don't need to go too far into it, but it's concern for the environment. It's concern for the entertainment industry. It's taking me and my friends out of work. There are a couple elements of it that I have a pretty strong distaste for, but to each their own and as they like.
Well, Mary, I really, really, this is like a situation where I am completely divided into, and I went back and forth so many times, because yes, I completely agree with you. And as a matter of fact, it's impossible to disagree with you. That is it. It is the fact, and it's every day more. So there's no argument on the other side. So I get it. The only argument that I had and I went through is my position with things in life and what I can do, what I cannot do, and where what resonates with me, what doesn't. Like, for instance, I've been a vegetarian for 27 years, right? Against all the odds, because I grew up in Sicily where the word wasn't even a thing. Because I felt like that was something that I really wanted to do, because it was the death of the animals, so I didn't want to participate in and blah, 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 right? Mm-hmm. So I got into that cause and other causes. And there's also causes that are not really, they can't resonate with me. And it's okay to understand, for me personally, I'm not preaching for everybody, for me personally, to what your battles are and what your battles aren't. Like for politics, for instance, I can get upset, whatever, but it's not my place. If I can do something about it, then great. Do something about it. But if there's something that is not really my battle, I cannot do it, right? In this situation, I have to understand, okay, am I damaging the world more than what I'm doing good just by sharing this aphorism that could help? And so at that point, I find myself say, okay, I'm not contributing particularly to this as an investor. I'm not pushing it. If they stop it tomorrow, I would be very happy. So I'm just getting this so that I can share these aphorisms with the world. That's where I found myself, or maybe I'm justifying the evil aspect of it. I really wouldn't be knowing it yet. I just went with my heart more than the greed.
Sure.
It's fine. It seems all conversations are going to move to AI as long as we don't spend our whole time on it. But it's a fine example of a thing if we're going to talk about fear and stuff. If you're replacing human labor, that's bad. Use an artist. But if it's enabling you to do things, you would not have the money. I'm not going to hire somebody. So for me, I have all these albums with all these songs, none of which have videos, or like two. I've made maybe two videos ever. I'm sure very soon I will figure out how to generate an AI video. That's probably just some abstract stuff floating around, or maybe put in a photo of me or whatever, you know, whatever the thing is, something that I would not have time to learn on my own. It would basically be like using Photoshop, but I'm using AI to create this thing much more quickly, because there is zero chance. I tried to hire somebody, a real animator, to do this, and it was going to be $5,000 to do freaking one song, and I have zero budget. So the fact that it is increasing productivity, but I am apprehensive about it, because I know musicians who are like, if I see one thing, you know, if I see somebody use an AI for something, it just completely turns me off then. I think that they're a shallow person, and it's not like I created the music with AI. Like, it's just, I'm a musician. I'm not an artist. No artists are jumping up to collaborate with me out of the love of my music, or the love of doing it, create something organic. Mary, what do you think about that as a specific?
I'll use this as an example. I had an actor friend who was going to be producing an AI created superhero TV show, essentially. And he wanted me to be a part of it. I've been wanting to be a superhero on a TV show or film for my entire life. It is still a goal of mine. I'd love to be a supervillain, XYZ. But ultimately, even though the opportunity seemed great, I could not allow myself to do it. Really, it's like, I think the biggest thing for me are like the environmental concerns and what it's doing to communities and what it does to water that then makes it unable to be filtered and processed for consumption. It's like the environmental concern for me is the strongest one. And I don't think people outside of the entertainment industry understand what's happening inside of it. It's really terrifying. It is very scary. And it's something that I personally don't want to touch or engage with, as it can ruin. I've been offered gigs to have myself like recorded and, pay me like $500 to film my face. And basically it's like, they don't say it outright, but you're training AI. And it's like, when I sell out, I'm going to sell out for much more than $500. Sure, and I'm not going to take one cookie for now that is going to take away my ability to ever have cookies in the future. It's very emotionally charged for me. It's very scary. And it's something that I'm working through.
Well, truly, it comes down to what you have control of. In the end, you have control what's within and very little what's beyond you. And so if in this situation, like if you were working with the people, the CEOs and all those people who are in charge, then definitely. But for what concerns like you, like in Mark's case, that he always wanted to have this video and never was he able because he doesn't have the funds or the time or whatever it is, then that would be just creating a video, really. And so, sure, it may feed the AI to understand that actually there's this kind of videos that could be done or made. I get it. But on the scale, he's really not hurting anybody. He's just making his video that he really wanted to do and share it with his friends and his wife.
Well, the processing time, I think what Mary's pointing out, that if I really were to take at least 200 songs... and I created a 3-minute video out of either that right there, the processing time involved in that, like that I've supposedly some city in Africa is not, no longer has water because I've done. Is that sort of what you're pointing at, Mary? I don't know the specifics about the environmental damage.
It is a little bit, and it's not something that's like far away in Africa. It's like in Tennessee. It's
sure.
In like North Carolina. Like it's damaging people's lives. It's driving people out of their homes. It's creating ridiculous sound pollution that disables them from being able to sell their home to get out of the current situation they're in. So I totally hear all the points here. But my personal take is, while we don't have control, like it's easy to be like, oh, I don't have control over that. Like that doesn't affect me. I don't have any power here. But I do have power in the choices that I make and choosing not to make the fire worse by feeding it.
Yeah, it's true.
And it's okay if we all disagree. That's totally fine. But in my opinion, it's like one, I do make a big difference. I make a difference in how I either engage with it or don't engage with it.
Now that we have an example of a fear and sort of how we deal with it for real, I think this puts the chapter here into perspective, which is, so I was saying the nice thing, this is very well, of course, there's a great history of aphorisms in philosophy, right? Lao Tzu, right? That some of the oldest philosophy we have, if you had some of these things, you know, if we have one of yours is stall or panic, fear, if left to its own devices, will keep on expanding until one either stalls or panics, right? If this was on a leaf from 3,000 years ago, we'd all be like, oh, wow, that's so cool. But I bet things do not have the sort of respect if you're just like, here, let me show you these poems I wrote. People are like, oh, my God, what is this? And for philosophy in particular, and let me now put on my academic snooty philosophy hat. Like, what is the philosophy here? Like, sort of that these aphorisms tend to be the beginning of a philosophical discussion. They're not actually philosophy. You were saying we only have control over mostly what's in our own minds. Everything else is out there. This is Stoicism. So the most popular kind of philosophy is right now is Stoicism. And it is very bumper sticker-y.
Right.
What's the serenity prayer? Grant me the serenity to change what I can, be comfortable with what I can't
change. Except the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Yes, there. That's a wonderful starting point. But as somebody trained in academic philosophy, you know, that's great if like any philosophy gets out to the people and gives them a thing to think about, even if it's like, what would Jesus do? Or just something else that can fit on a bumper sticker, more power to them. But if they think that's what philosophy is and that's all there is to it, then it just makes me cringe. And like, well, why have I spent all of my life reading these dense texts? How can we apply, for instance, the sort of approach in these fear's worst fear is not to be feared? Life brings anxiety when control is out of control. These sort of two, what Mary was expressing, which is complicated. It's not made up. It's a real thing. She's not letting it keeping her from following her dreams. It's not like fear of change. But yeah, let's can we make this concrete a little bit?
Sure. And you said something very interesting, the fact that like this aphorisms, they are a starting point like of a conversation, but also they are an arrival point of a thought or a life. So it's actually, they are at the conjunction between a thought that made sense, it was constructed and had a complete clarity, and then also the other, or some sort of clarity, and the other part, which is the beginning of the sharing of it. So the beginning of a conversation, that's where, you know, generally philosophy is right there before a creative thought and the beginning of thoughts. So it's right there. Now, how do we, you know, apply philosophy and make it practical? That is generally a personal journey. And so it goes into a little bit of more like a self-help reality or a spiritual reality, which we could discuss, but it's not necessarily philosophy's job to do that. But on the spiritual aspect, though, if we are have like a very strong ego, a strong personality, and that what we think it is, we have a so constructed persona, then there's no philosophy, as beautiful as it could be or deep as it could be, that would be anything more than a bumper sticker, beautiful thing. It's like, yeah, that's cool. That's nice, cute. And that doesn't reach you. The way to reach you, any of the kinds of philosophy, is first of all, how open you are to the reception. But even if you are open to the reception, is how open you are to put whatever it is in the work. And if you have time and you have the ability to have the still mind that will go against it, and how it can resonate with you and actually apply it. So those are all things that are personal. There's very little that a philosopher per se could do beyond the words, or maybe write something that talks exactly about that. Yet, I mean, in the book, there's a part that talks about it, which is in the ego. If your ego is so strong, there's no way that anything will reach you. Because, you know, we think that the ego is the sum of all your experiences, everything that happened to you, all the things you think, what you think is right, what is right, what is wrong. Those are all the things that are there. But you actually are the one behind it, the one who was watching it and observing it. If you give the ego that much importance, then there's no way that anybody, from Jesus to Snoop Dogg, can tell you that you will really care about besides, oh, that's nice.
There's something interesting. I'm glad that you brought that up. There are a couple interesting things I took away from the Ego Farms chapter. It's that everything we do is a reflection of how we regard and tend to ourselves. Every thought, every action is a reflection of our sense of self. And something else it caused me to muse on is And it comes back a little bit to the AI conversation that we're having, that I feel like it is very important for everyone to be aware of how powerful they are and how much of an effect that we have on those who see and hear us and everything in our ecosystem and our biome, and like as it continues to expand. And I feel like this is the notes I took from reading it. So I say this in the best way. I feel like these chapters and these aphorisms are very incendiary, but it's up to us to catch the fire. I mean, positively incendiary, like illuminating maybe is a better word. And it also made me muse that we have a responsibility to tend to ourselves and tend to our source of power so that we can positively interact and engage and give gifts. And this comes to the improvisation thing. Like my core operating system is based on improvisation. And I endeavor to act in a way where I am a gift and I am consistently giving gifts to everyone and everything that sees and hears me. And I endeavor to transact in joy and abundance as much as possible, because I know that I have a power in joy. And I think that's one of the ways that I am dealing with my strong opinion on the use of AI, is to kind of something you said earlier, Andrea. Well, you said something that caused me to think this, right? A led to B led to C, that karmic balance in a way. Like I teach a lot of improv and I perform a lot. So I work really hard to help activate people to their own creative power and voice that then creates ripples to empower them to continue to be creative and playful, because I know the power of joy. So that's kind of like where I center myself in being joyful and helping facilitate joy and creativity for my students.
Exactly. And the magic of improv is so really connected to the whole concept of Think Town. There's neuroscientific studies that show that the mind performs 6,200, on average a day, 6,200 distinct thoughts. Most of them are analytical. So you will be thinking about how to do this. What he said that. She said, okay, what you did, so much is completely up in the air. So the mind keeps talking. We know about it, right? The mind keeps talking. All these thoughts are there. And they generate so much different energy within you. You can be in the bathroom just thinking about a conversation you had with that person and be so upset about it. And the person's not even there. But inside of you, you are causing so much trouble, right? It's just happening. And those are parts of all the things that your mind is creating. You block the energy. And so you wouldn't even be able to say anything good to that person. If that person showed up in the bathroom, you would actually yell at the person for all the things you created there. So you are creating all that strong connection of molecules inside of you that creates a negative, whatever it is, or could be positive. The negative is easier for us to relate in the example. With improv, it's some sort of like meditation. You try, the better you become, the more you bypass the thinking and you just go directly to what it is. There's a little bit of thinking. It's not that analytical. It's there to support. And so you already do that so much with improv. You are, for instance, a candidate to be more tickled by an aphorism than the accountant, for instance. I'm sorry to all the accountants, just an example.
To someone who maybe not be so much like creative, whimsical minded. Yeah, a more practical mindset as opposed to an artistic mindset.
Someone whose profession has made them and everything they encounter into something merely quantitative, merely a thing and no longer a human. Yeah, okay, we get it. Yeah, sorry.
A few times that I personally got to do improv, I loved so much the magic. And I've seen people, I mean, you might have seen it, people with even mental challenges being incredible improv, which if the game wasn't bypass everything and just go for it, they wouldn't be able to perform at all. And that is really what we do with the mind in general. That's the artistic way. You have a goal. You have to make the audience laugh or just entertain. You also are entertaining your colleagues while you do it. There's all that dynamic, right? Those are the little games that are going through. So that attaches you to something. But the mind is very little. It's involved, but very little. You're not overthinking anything. And the more you do, you realize you're actually creating something even not that good. And then, or maybe you have to remember. All you do is just, okay, I remember. That was good. Remember it until I can talk. You know, those things. That is really a perfect reflection of what we do in life. Like if I see somebody slapping somebody on the street, how do I interact with that situation? Like if I got in my mind, I get this is terrible, whatever it is, and I'm going to yell or whatever, I'm going to make it more of a mess. If I instead just let all that mind process go, so it doesn't tickle anything within me that which is connected to that time my dad slapped me or blah blah blah, so I can be more centered in that situation, I can be much better, more efficient in that moment, and maybe say the right thing, or maybe the right thing is just to hug the kid or call the police, whatever the case is, I would be way more efficient. Just like improv, when you act without overthinking, without sitting down and writing the line of what you have to say.
Well, Ms. Rochella, Ms. Hines, here at the DOT, when we detect that some of our workers just have your egos are too big, that you're unable to learn the basics of mechanistic imperial pavement design, then we get you in here, we try to work on what might be going on inside each one of you that's keeping you from getting the good word down.
I really appreciate... I'm so sorry. I'm going to speak first because I'm very confident and I know that what I say is about to be a gift. Dr. Linkter, I really appreciate you taking the time to call us in here, but I can speak for myself and say that I'm perfect in every way. And it's really, honestly, it's just going to be a waste of your time.
I personally do not care what she's saying. What I'm telling you, first of all, I don't think you're right. I don't think you found the right things. And you who put you in charge of it? Like, who are you?
I mean, I'm officially in the line of command here. Let me pull down the org chart. See, there's your boss, and there's your boss's boss, and I'm above that.
That's you up at the top.
No, actually, that's I'm a consultant hired by your boss's boss's boss. So,
so that's you off the chart.
Off the charts. Bringing in my independent experience, my vast knowledge. Part of it is I got this book and I just want to, as you consider the place of the quality of your thought compared to what we're trying to teach you, trying to get you to learn here, ego tends to pig out on glory, secreting vices. So you should feed it responsibly.
Well, honestly, I have to stop you right there because if you're secreting in the workplace, then you should probably take a sick day.
Okay. Yeah. Sometimes I agree with what she says.
I would say thank you, but it doesn't matter to me.
Also, I would have said it better, but okay, fine. Wait, I just wanted to know that I don't even know whether how did you find us, and what makes you think that we will be subjected to what you are going to tell us?
Oh my gosh, what a great point.
In addition to the reports from your superiors to their superiors to their superiors to the men who hired me.
All the way up the chart, all the way up.
We just have detectors in all the departments for detecting the secreted vices that come from your ego's polluted land that is growing mania and depression. Yeah, we can, modern technology, mostly AI, can detect all that kind of stuff. And let's see, that red light goes up. Oh, we got another one. We're going to have to pull in a couple more students down there in traffic control. I guess they're getting a little too big for their britches.
Oh, wow. I do have to thank you. You know, I didn't think there was anyone with a stronger, more robust sense of ego than myself and Douglas here. So, Mr. Linkter, hats off to you. You have a stronger, bigger sense of ego than I do. I didn't even think that was possible.
And I actually want to thank you even louder, if possible.
Oh.
Because I have realized that perhaps I have had an approach towards you a little bit too harsh, but now that I see how big you are, I actually respect you a little bit more.
And now that I see you, I don't only have respect for you, I have reverence. Because respect implies judgment, and it's a lower vibrational level of reverence, so I have reverence for you. Dr. Linkter.
The type of authority that I represent is not only, of course, my immense physical size and my powerful voice and my
you are
demeanor,
very large.
But is the fact that ultimately I'm hired by the state.
much larger than you and your little individual concerns. Oh. And, you know, once you buck the state and you refuse to learn the dogma of the day, which in this case, again, is mechanistic empirical pavement design. You know, it's being able to determine whether the road is going to last long term, depending on what sort of additives are put into it, that we can do all this stuff with computers. Yeah, so it's really the entire technological governmental complex that stands beside me and my authority.
It is not our responsibility to upkeep the roads that we designed. Douglas and I designed those roads. We did a really good job, and maintenance is not up to us. That is beneath us. So I'm so sorry. Once again, you're wasting your time because we are too good to deal with these minor technicalities.
Oh, yeah. And also, I want to tell you that I unfortunately have a brother. His name is Douglas. And in fact, they call us Douglas and Douglas. And so he has all this thing that talks about all the spirituality, the fact that he was able to become much better than me, which is basically impossible. We know it. And he said that the only way to become this great that he says he is, actually he didn't say it, he acts it, but he doesn't say anything ever that he's great, is that he deconstructed completely himself from what he knew, what he likes, what he doesn't like, and just got directly to the essence of what he is. I don't really, stupidity.
Okay, that's really cute. That's really cute that you have a twin brother named Douglas, but I actually have a twin sister named Mary, and she's a growth on my back, so she's always with me.
Okay. And what I don't know if you are as unfortunate as I am to have this brother of mine who keeps showing, without ever really telling me that I'm wrong, but just showing me like this elevated way of living, which is by deconstructing what you want and what you don't want and just feel instead. And so, I mean, his life is incredible. I must say that. And perhaps somewhat better than me, although I deserve it way more than he does. I deserve way more. But
I deserve more than you.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, then the officer here will decide.
Yes.
But what I know is that my life is not as great as his, because despite all the luxury that I've correctly accumulated with all of the great things that I've done.
It's a very nice blazer. I was meaning to compliment you on it. It's very beautiful. The shoulder pads are perfectly designed, and the lapel is very flattering to your facial structure.
Thank you. I actually asked the designer to do it that way. So thank you for noticing. But my brother, who actually lives in some sort of bucolic life, and he seems to be so happy regardless of what happens to him. And I don't believe it, because he talks about the fact that getting rid of the ego actually allows you to live a much easier life.
Preposterous.
Yeah, because he doesn't have the mansion I have. He lives in this stupid little house in the country, this side with his wife, and they seem to be so happy, but I don't believe it. Definitely can't be.
Well, it seems like from initial assessment, the two of you are at very different points. Douglas, I see that this long term, having someone in your life that makes you see that maybe there are other ways of living that are beyond your fantasies and your self-conception, that you fit yourself into a little box, that just having somebody there that can be a bright, shining beacon to show you that there is something outside the suffocating little enclosure in which you put yourself, that's pretty good. So I'm gonna let you go on sort of probation here, but Ms. Hines, we're I think you got a little more serious problem. So you're gonna have to stay in the box until next week and just think about what kind of a monster you've become, and then we'll see what kind of how receptive you are next week to the lessons mechanistic empirical pavement design. You sing the song. Just keep saying that over and over again as you sit in the box. All right. So
great.
let's wrap that up. Oh man, I vocally regret that choice. That was I've been watching too much of the Tim Heidecker Onion takeover of InfoWars is in my feed. So it's like Tim Heidecker doing an Alex Jones impersonation. So that was sort of a me seeing if I could do that horrible Alex Jones voice.
You did a great job. And Andrea, you did really very well as well. I mean, I did something that's a little bit more complex in improvisation, where I normally try to be in joy and abundance, but also you can be joyfully a jerk. So I was playing with this idea of ego and how would someone act who had this super sense of themselves. It's interesting. I'm playing more with concepts of like, one can be argumentative
and still saying yes and still yesing and anding. So I gave you a big challenge there by giving you this big personality and these big kind of like bossy statements, and you took them so beautifully. And Mark, you did very well as well. So just wanted to try something a little different with that. It was very fun.
That's why like I played someone who was even bigger than you, at least in my head.
Are you sure?
In my head. I'm going to introduce my brother so that we could have that also balance on that aspect.
It was very fun.
And I should point out that I was quoting, of course, some sections from the Think
Yes,
Town
you did great.
Ego chapter. I know that's, you know, if you're improvising on stage, you don't get to have monitors open. So I could remind myself of what mechanistic empirical pavement design, which is something that I've dealt with in my day job a little bit, writing about over the just to have a business. We should talk about that sometime, Mary, of technobabble, of how coming up with
technobabble
with clever sounding, or I think it probably works best, as in this case, if you can come up with some ridiculous details from some mundane thing that is a little esoteric that you can then sprinkle on, you know, if you have baseball scores or band names or you know, whatever.
Just make
kind
sure
of
you
trivia.
Only sprinkle one teaspoon, because any more than that creates gastrointestinal distress.
There you go. Yes. Just the term mechanism. And then I said a little bit about what it was toward the end, but it doesn't matter. It was not the point. But I like that idea sort of when I sort of initially raised my snobby philosopher's hat that, yes, don't think because of your experience that you should not be open to wisdom coming in forms that you are not expecting. So I think there are some philosophy professors that are perfectly willing to like, here, oh, there's a rap song that has some philosophical content, to like see where philosophical insight should come from. Because a lot of, even right, the most famous philosophers might be in some way reflecting on or based in the sentiments that are from literature, right? Socrates would not be Socrates if there wasn't Homer. That was like a shared thing that everybody had read their Homer. And so they have these visions of what honor and morality meant to them at that time that you could at least use as a starting point. So, you know, anything that anybody says, any bit of cultural commentary is always a good starting point for philosophy, even if it's not, does not in itself constitute analytical thinking of the highest order.
No, it's very fascinating. I think I'm definitely looking forward to when I have some time to muse and read and reflect to take a trip back to Think Town.
Oh, thank you. Think Town would be very happy to have you in it. The journey of putting it together and so living inside the mind, which was my mind, but also the town, it was such a beautiful time. And it was one of the few times in my life that actually was a systematic and diligent with time. Like every day I would wake up and then at 9 a.m. from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m., no matter what, I would be putting together the town. And so that was a beautiful process. And definitely, besides, you know, the book and all of it, was a great opportunity to get in touch with all those things that were written before, and to get in touch with my own, being the visitor of my own mind. The biggest hope and wish that there is with this book is that it just allows a little better approach with what's within the mind from a philosophical standpoint, but generally on a positive side. And so, you know, in the entrance and the exit is the concept of like the mind is the way to get in, but also you need to get out. And the moment you do, that's where you get to the sort of, or whatever they call it, nirvana or a perfect level of being present. And so that was my experience. And I hope that can reach some as many as possible.
Wonderful.
Yes, I was trying to detect sort of overall what your philosophy is in this. And, you know, I mentioned Stoicism and the sort of self-help kind of stuff that we get. But yes, it does get in keeping with what I was saying at the beginning about Taoism or whatever, this sort of Eastern escape and tranquility. And, you know, it all goes up with the modern self-help package. Thanks. Great. Get to know your material and chatting with you.
Thank you for having me. This was a lot of fun. I really appreciate it. And thank you for reading it. Thank you for taking a little portion of your life to spend some time to spend it on the book. That really, really makes me happy. Thank you for the love. Really.
Yeah. Thanks, Andrea. Thanks, everyone, for listening.
All right. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to the show. I have a big announcement about our Patreon, patreon.com/philosophyimprov. The posts on that site are now free for everyone who follows the page.
So for more than half of the episodes, going back 5 years now almost, there is a post-game segment that is bonus talking that occurs at the end of episodes, often reflecting on the episode, giving some behind the scenes, maybe giving you some recommendations of things to watch, to read. Well, that will all be yours. A completely ad-free experience. Yours. The ability to still listen to the podcast on whatever podcast app you want, like Apple Podcasts. That will be yours. Plus, the ability to listen on Spotify, who has an exclusive deal with Patreon. You'll now be able to listen to this podcast in full, ad-free there. So again, you go to patreon.com/philosophyimprov. You do have to sign up for a Patreon account. Very easy to do. It gives you your personal URL to put into the podcast app. Or on my phone, it was just a matter of clicking that URL and it sets it up in the podcast app automatically. We are doing this to grow the community. And of course, while you're there, it's very easy if you want to decide to give us a little tip, a little recurring donation that would help make sure the podcast keeps getting made. And there are a handful of purely bonus episodes like the redacted one that we talked about a couple weeks ago. Those are reserved for the paying folks, but you will get almost all of it just for going through this little bit of rigmarole to set things up. Thanks. Bankrupt. Bankrupt. Bankrupt.